Hi, this is Peter Kenny, host and manager of MusicNotNoise.com and LPMix.live, your online entertainment radio network. In the year 2011, Ron Delacqueza published a book called Radio My Way, featuring celebrity profiles from jazz, opera, and the American Songbook. Ron has brought music and musical legends alive for 50 years. In Ron's real voice, we're hearing stories of his career in radio. Discover Boston's vibrant music scene as only Ron can tell it. This audio presentation of Radio My Way has been offered by the Perkins Institution for the Blind, a worldwide leader in education for children and young adults who are blind and visually impaired, located in Watertown, Massachusetts. Please visit them at perkins.org for more about their services and contributions. And now, here's Chapter 1 of Radio My Way with Ron Delacqueza, called Radio Kid.
There are times when I look back at my life to discover where this passion for radio began, only to realize there's no mystery at all. My beginnings were storybook perfect to grow the seeds of an obsession for broadcasting. Ever since that first day I sat in awe in front of a radio, I wondered how I could become part of the magic of the voices inside the box. I was born on February 18, 1938, in Quincy, Massachusetts, a city known as the birthplace of two presidents, John Adams and John Quincy Adams, both of whom had lived just a mile from our home on High Street, and for its stone quarries, where my grandfather toiled many long hours. In my neighborhood, the two most important things to kids after school were sandlot baseball and getting home in time to listen to their favorite radio programs. After all, this was the golden age of radio, a time when radio was the focus of entertainment right up through the advent of television in 1948. We would race home to listen to the Lone Ranger, Superman, Captain Midnight, Duffy's Tavern, Tom Mix and the Ralston Straight Shooters, and The Shadow. These wondrous programs filled our afternoons and evenings with entertainment. Everything happened in our minds. That was the magic and the mystery of radio. Our charged imaginations kept us hooked day after day. Who did Captain Midnight look like? What about his evil enemy Ivan Shark and Tom Mix the Cowboy? We could send away for a picture, but we were too busy building our own movie sets in our minds, conjuring the faces of our heroes, their loves, and their archenemies. And each program would end on a cliffhanger, leaving us breathless from one day to the next. I'd lie in bed staring in the dark, worrying about Superman. Would kryptonite trip him up and keep him from springing Lois Lane from the evil clutches of those who are terrorizing the city? Most of the shows were sponsored by drinks or cereals. Ovaltine sponsored Captain Midnight. Ralston and Farina backed Tom Mix. So many labels from Ovaltine got you the Captain Midnight secret decoder ring. But when you finally got a ring, the message was always the same. Buy Ovaltine! I confess, I still have my ring and an embarrassing number of premiums in an envelope somewhere. To this day, I get excited when I see a lumpy envelope in the mail. Hell, it might be a decoder ring or prize. A pair of glow-in-the-dark Tom Mix spurs. Anything's possible. It boiled down to scoring box tops, labels, and premiums. So I had my mom, a very Catholic woman, stealing Ovaltine labels in the store. That's what it was like being an only child for me. My parents would go to hell and back to make me happy. My mother, Florence, and my father, Aldo, had been married a good 13 years before I was born. As an only child, I became the focus of their life. They both grew up in Quincy and became schoolteachers. My earliest memories of my father, however, really began at the end of World War II in 1946. I didn't see much of him before that time because he was called up from the reserves shortly after Pearl Harbor in 1941. My mother described the day my father caught the train to report to active duty. We went with him to South Station. This was in 1942, and I was just 4 years old. Crying, I begged my father not to leave and ran after him into the train. It was not an easy day. A kind-hearted couple who'd been watching approached and offered to drive us home or help us in whatever way we needed. But my mom declined the offer and just thanked them. We went home just the two of us, where we had to build our lives together until he returned. Those early days were a bittersweet mix of missing my dad and enjoying a quintessential New England childhood that was tinged with all that World War II brought to the populace. People tightened their belts, Rosie the Riveter rolled up her sleeves, and I remember lying in bed listening to the sounds of destroyers being built in the Quincy shipyard nearby, a rhythmic pounding that went on all night long. I'd gaze out my window at a sky lit ghostly white from the factories below. We'd ration stamps, buy savings bonds, and save scrap metal. A star was displayed in the windows of the families who had a brother, a father, or sister serving overseas. We sat in the dark for air raids, waiting for the all-clear to turn our lights back on again. I remember my photograph being taken in a little army uniform, then gazing at it the next week in the local newspaper where my mother had proudly sent it. Though times were hard for my mom, she definitely knew how to take care of business. She handled all the practical matters, the finances, the shopping, everything required of a World War II housewife. I think she tried to keep things as normal as possible for me, but we both missed Dad. Meanwhile, I'd listen to the radio. Our radio was the centerpiece, the beating heart of the living room. In fact, of the whole house. At 7 years old, I became a regular listener of the Metropolitan Opera on Saturday afternoons. My mother would be cooking in the kitchen on snowy winter days when you couldn't get out, while thundering, passionate voices filled the rooms, warming us. As young as I was, I would have given anything to see an actual opera. The voice of Milton Cross was magic to me. He had a way of telling the story of the opera and describing the action on stage that brought it fully alive. He would capture the colors of the costumes, the way the great gold curtain parted to magnificent scenery, the way the singers moved, and the reaction of the audience. The bravos, the pageantry, all the romantic or wrenching drama was forever etched in the theater of my mind. I thought at the time that it would be the best sort of life to be an opera singer. I eventually realized that I didn't have the voice, but from those earliest childhood days, I felt that someday I just had to be on the radio. I was so inspired by radio programs that one day I built a fake radio station in my bedroom. I had a turntable, 78 RPM records, and a little cardboard microphone. I'd write my own scripts, create my own shows, commercials, and man, did I impress myself. I had the radio bug, and I had it bad. My dad came home in 1946. I was 8 years old. It was then that I really began to get to know him. The truth was, my father was a dreamer. A graduate of Massachusetts College of Art in the 20s, he thought only of painting, travel, and the beautiful places in the world he wanted to visit someday. For him, it was all about aesthetics. My father really was one of those inherently gifted Renaissance men. He certainly wasn't someone out to make a lot of money or change the world. He lived in his own world of art, music, drawing, painting, sunsets, and beauty in general. When he wasn't teaching art and mechanical drawing at Braintree High School, he'd be painting or drawing or indulging his love of art by visiting museums. He told me he once spied John Singer Sargent walking along Huntington Avenue and followed him all day, though he was so in awe of the man that he couldn't bring himself to approach him or say a word. As young as I was, it was hard to understand the notion of my father at war and his necessary transition to civilian life. I now know that part of his recovery from the trauma of what he had seen those past 4 years was to immerse himself back into his world, especially that of music and painting. He also couldn't wait to be a father and husband again. On Saturday afternoons, the radio would always be tuned into the Metropolitan Opera. But now my dad added a whole new dimension to the experience. Not only could he paint, he could sing all the arias from the operas, even though he couldn't read a note of music. He had a collection of 78 RPM records that he played on our wonderful Cherrywood Victrola. His parents had brought it with them from Italy. To this day, I listen to Caruso recordings on that very same turntable. Incredible how the sound fills the room. Dad would sing while he was shaving, sing at the breakfast table, sing as he got dressed for work. He'd put on a record and belt out arias from Verdi, from Puccini, and sing along with all the great tenor voices from Italian opera, Caruso, Gigli, and De Stefano. In a way, he was like my dear friend Tony Bennett. When he wasn't painting, he would sing. When he wasn't singing, he was sketching or painting. My father began to take me into Boston on Sundays. First stop was always art supplies, his brushes and paints, followed by a museum, after which I would beg him to take me to a radio station. I was obsessed with wanting to know how a radio station looked, how it was all laid out, who did what, and how everything came together to create shows. Usually he'd give in to my pleading and would go to visit one of them. Many of the stations at that time were in hotels. WBZ was in the Hotel Bradford in the theater district. WNAC was in the Hotel Buckminster in Kenmore Square near Fenway Park. A radio station in a hotel was such a romantic notion. Tourists would be checking in on one floor, while the floor above would be dedicated to a station. A plate glass window is the only thing separating an orchestra with a live studio audience from the broadcast booth, an announcer, and gaggles of wide-eyed tourists and visitors. It was my father who took me to my first opera, La Boheme, in 1946, at the old Boston Opera House on Huntington Avenue, not far from Symphony Hall. It was a beautiful building patterned after the great opera houses in Europe. It has since been torn down, but there remains a little street called Opera Place, its original home. This is where it all started for me, on that hot June afternoon in Boston, where the sounds that moved me while listening to the radio and my father's records finally became wed to a live performance. We sat way up and far in the back of one of the several balconies that hugged a horseshoe-shaped stage, peering down at the performers through binoculars. My ears vibrated from the sheer power of their voices. Even at that young age, I was stirred by the dramatic emotion behind the words. I sat in awe as love, betrayal, suffering, and joy seemed to explode all around me. Soon after this day, we took a trip to New York City, venturing past the old Metropolitan Opera House where so many greats had sung. Lily Pons, Beniamino Gigli, Rosa Poncel. From there we went backstage on 7th Avenue where all the scenery was stored. The back door to the stage was open, and I turned to my dad and asked if we could go in. He found one of the stagehands and got permission to walk out on the stage. We passed through a dark, musty hallway to the back entrance. Finally, I stood there on the well-traveled blonde wood. It seemed to go on endlessly until it disappeared into darkness at the back of the house. It was magic. My father grinned and said to me, "Come on, Ron, why don't you sing a few notes?" My heart pounded as I gazed up at the famous golden horseshoe, but I think I sang a little bit of Pagliacci. The great hall seemed to hold my voice in its giant hands, echoing it softly back to me. Now I can say that I sang on the stage of the old Metropolitan Opera House, the very same stage graced by the great Caruso. What a nice way for a Quincy boy to begin a relationship with opera.
Radio My Way is my story about my love for radio, meeting and interviewing jazz greats like Illinois Jacquette, the legendary Tony Bennett, singers like Peggy Lee, Joe Williams, Mel Torme, and the great Pavarotti. I'm Ron Della Chiesa, and I think you'll enjoy how my love for radio started over 50 years ago and continues to this day. I feel like I'm one lucky guy. Radio My Way. available through Amazon.com. And stay tuned, the best is yet to come.